Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Monday, May 7th, 2012. And I'm not Bill Buckmaster. I'm Shelley Fishman. Bill and his wife Ann are celebrating their 40th wedding anniversary, and they're off at some resort having a really great time while we watch the world kind of fall apart from our vantage here in Tucson. We're coming to you on AM 1030 KVOI, the voice, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and simulcasting on KAPR AM 930 in Douglas. We live stream the show at buckmastershow.com and at kvoi.com. You can hear the program anytime at buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, and tucsonsentinel.com. Every Monday, and today is Monday, on the Buckmaster Show, we kick off the week with the Monday Political Face-Off, featuring one of our two teams of commentators. This week, it's Bruce Ash, the Republican National Committeeman for Arizona, and Paul Eckerstrom, Vice Chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. The Monday Political Face-Off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family-owned and run since 1985, specializing in custom-framed mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and handling services, and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. Well, guys, let me ask you a question. First of all, thank you for coming.
Yeah.
This show is going to be a little different from what we normally have on Monday because you guys are here for the whole hour.
Yeah.
So we can get in depth and really talk about some issues. I think everybody out there knows your resumes. I have them in front of me. Do you want me to read them?
No.
I'd really prefer everybody not but just falling asleep and nodding off. But I would like to ask Paul a question. At the Democrat headquarters here in Tucson, is there really a chair for vice? Because you're referred to as the vice chair. Did Shelley really mean co-chair?
Yeah, no.
Where do you guys have a chair for vice?
Oh, we definitely have a chair for, but we're good at vice.
It's like vice president, you know.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I just want to check.
I don't have
out.
To do a whole lot. I just have to, you know, be okay. Vice chair.
Well, the audience should know that last Friday I sent these guys an email kind of preparing them to talk about something that's been troubling me for a while and something that is becoming more and more discussed as this country enters into what I hope will be a productive national dialogue on the very basis of our democracy and the basis for how we run our government. And that is the fact that our rhetoric politically seems to have become more and more polarized to the point that we're demonizing each other for not just purposes of political gain, but in the back rooms, in the way we are dealing with each other in trying to get things done in our government, so that we're beginning to see that polarization is now not just for political effect, but might have at its core, a true schism in the way this country thinks about itself. Not clear to me that we can continue to run this country successfully if we can't find a way to the middle. And that's what I'd like to talk about. The other thing is that there's collateral damage from this use of demonization and fear. And that collateral damage is not necessarily anticipated. It is collateral damage that fear just causes inaction. It causes inaction among our business owners. It causes inaction among our investors. We see $1.5 trillion sitting on the sidelines because people don't know whether we're actually in a recovery or in the worst, you know, depression since God created depressions. And that is causing secondary damage that could be very damaging to people, for instance, who want to retire, have their money in cash, and are losing money every year to inflation rather than having their money invested in what is actually one of the, you know, biggest bull markets that we've seen in a long time. So the national conversation about the size and role of government, implications for tax policy, for the future of entitlement programs, for education, both our primary and secondary educational systems, and also higher education and technical training. Healthcare, certainly, and we'll spend some time in the second hour discussing our role in the world in terms of foreign policy, trade policy, and how we compete or can we compete with state-sponsored economies. Basic question, of course, is the national conversation going to cast light on these subjects, or will we simply overstate the differences and create an atmosphere of fear and demonization? And so I'd like to start with you, Bruce. Let's talk about tax policy for a second. We hear very clearly from the Republican side that there will be no new taxes, there will be no tax increases. We hear some little bit of flexibility around that if we're talking about perhaps closing loopholes. But is that an intractable position, or will there be room in the center?
Well, fixing loopholes is a form of tax reform. It is an increase without specifically saying that you just voted for a tax increase. And there are many Republicans who believe that is something that ought to be done. So I don't think that there's much argument amongst Republicans that there ought to be reform with our tax code.
Okay. You know, interestingly, the U.S. tax code has always been what's called progressive. That is, richer people who can earn more money or who do earn more money typically pay more as a percentage, not only the absolute amount they pay, but as a percentage of their total income, they pay a higher amount. That has been true throughout the developed world. It is actually less true now in Europe than it was once because of the VAT tax, which is a regressive tax where everybody pays the same thing. And we've heard an awful lot about taxing more and making our system more progressive. Paul, what do you think about that? I mean, should we be looking in that direction or simply trying to close loopholes?
Well, I think actually if you went back to the straight progressive three-tiered income tax and got rid of a lot of these deductions over the years that have been Christmas treed onto the to the whole system that gives predominantly, not all of them, but predominantly favor very wealthy people, which I think has contributed to a real concentration of wealth in this country and has put real stressors on the middle class, we could get the revenues we need to close deficits and actually still do the programs we want to do in investing in our future economy, especially in education and things like research and development that I think are really, really important to compete worldwide in the future. The problem with that is the people who have a lot of money don't want government to do that because they would then have to pay a little bit more in.
What evidence do you have that that's true?
Well, over the years, the income tax rate has fallen dramatically in the upper tier, in real payments because of all these deductions. And the other thing that's evident is, for example, the capital gains tax has been slashed heavily over the years to the point where now even at our state government at the last second did another cut for capital gains. And after 5 years, 6 years of slashing our schools. And so there's only so much money to go around. And if you're gonna give a tax giveaway to folks like that, what's going to happen is your schools are going to suffer.
So let's do a sincerity check. Bruce, what we hear from the Republican side a lot is that the reason we can't be taxing or have higher tax rates or more taxes on the wealthy is that they are the job creators and that they need that money to continue to feed the economy. What about that?
Well, I know you're not going to be very pleased with my answer. But,
I'm trying to stay neutral here. It won't last all day, but I'm trying.
Well, the question I really pose back to you and to Paul is a question of fairness. Now, the president and a number of Democrats have talked quite a bit about fairness recently. what would Paul suggest, or what would Shelley suggest, that a fair amount, percentage-wise, of the entire tax burden that is collected federally here in the United States be on the top 1% earners, the 1% that, you know, the other 99% have disparaged so much in the past year or so with the Occupy movement?
Well, that's a fair question. Yeah, it's a fair question, and I'm gonna throw this over to Paul in a second, but let me see if I can reframe the question just a tiny bit. The question you're asking is a macroeconomic question that's very important to the future of really our free market system, both here and in Europe. I don't think we know the answer to the question because we've experimented with several ways of approaching it. And we've had some success over the years and some failures over the years. What we're seeing going on in Europe now is a very active discussion about exactly that kind of thing. Paul?
Yeah, there's a balance that needs to be reached. And I think we're out of balance right now. We're out of balance, obviously, in our budget because we're running high deficits. Part of that is because of the recession, but part of it is over the years, and this is starting back with Ronald Reagan, who maybe we were out of balance in terms of the tax rates then. He brought them down for wealthy people. They were brought down dramatically under the Bush tax cuts. Now, the Bush tax cuts actually threw us into deficit. And if we want to get out of deficit, we're definitely going to have a combination of cuts to spending, but also bring back some of that revenue.
But let's deal with Bruce's question.
My proposal is, how about we go back to the tax rates under Bill Clinton's years, which was fairly low for wealthy folks.
So your approach to the answer would be whatever the tax rates were after the 1993 mm-hmm. tax reform, that would be fair. Bruce, I take it that you don't agree.
Well, look, Paul still hasn't – nobody's answered the question, how much of the federal tax revenues do the Democrats feel is fair
for the upper
1%
to
pay?
And I think
I appreciate your rephrasing, but that wasn't the question I asked.
Got it. Let's take a quick break. Let's come back and answer that question.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron McIntosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry, working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for bio development. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
And we're back live in the studio. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, and it's our Monday political debate. And we have Paul Eckerstrom and Bruce Ash. And Bruce asked a question before the break. We were talking about taxation, and we were talking about what's fair. Is it fair to ask, or what is the right number that richer people should pay into the economy as a percentage of the total? I was suggesting that perhaps that's not the right question, but Bruce was kind of insistent in the break, and I think he has a real point. Do we know what's fair, and how do we judge what's fair, Paul?
Yeah, and you know, Bruce made the point that there's a large amount of people don't even pay taxes mm-hmm. because of maybe a housing
– To the federal government.
Right. To the for example, like
Income
house,
taxes.
A mortgage deduction maybe wipes out what they actually have to pay, in the middle class or lower. And I'm of the opinion that everybody really needs to have skin in the game in terms of helping us out of this budget deficit and debt. How we phase that in is important because we're still struggling to get out of a recession. And I'm not saying that maybe tax increases on more wealthy people go into effect right away because we are struggling out of a recession. We need to get through that before we can then start dealing with our budget deficit situation. But there is some issues of fairness. And I would think we had a nice balance, I thought, in the 90s when our economy was going strong. We balanced our budget. The tax rates had come down on the rich during the Reagan years, but they hadn't come down too much, in my opinion. And I think that makes sense. And you know, there's talk about only bringing back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy to help balance our budget. I don't necessarily agree with my party on that. I think everybody, mm-hmm. all the tax cuts that Bush put in place, should come back at least phased in at some point.
Well, what
in
we
the
know
near
about
future.
That tax. Set of tax rates was that for at least 8 years it worked, and that's all we know about it is that it seemed to work. We have no idea, of course, what would have happened if that had continued. We also know that very much higher rates for rich people.
Well, it has continued. The 2003 tax cuts continue to be in effect today, just as in the same fashion as when they were passed.
Well, right, but that's the point. The 93 rates. no longer apply. We have another set of rates. We also know that, the rates, for instance, during the 50s, one of the times of the most possible growth you could imagine, we had tax rates that were much, much higher at the top end.
Well, I don't think you can compare 2012 or 13 with what the economy was in 1956, when the United States essentially was this overwhelming economic juggernaut in the entire world. Today, we have a significant amount of competition with a new emerging economy in China, as well as India, as well as many South American countries. Europe, you know, was still in a state of devastation.
Bruce,
in the mid-50s.
I agree with that. But what I'm trying to get to is this question of fairness. And again, we have experimented with the answer to that question for as long as we've been a country. I don't know that you get to a factual basis for what the answer is, but I certainly understand your feeling that there needs to be some fairness, and everybody has to participate.
Well, these are the facts. 47% of American federal taxpayers pay zero. The 1% highest wage earners in this country pay approximately 70% of all of the tax revenues that come into the federal treasury.
But there's nothing inherently unfair about that.
We run approximately 40 cents of every dollar is borrowed. So if approximately 50% of the 99% who are out there, these not wealthy people, and by the standards compared anywhere in the world, the 99% are pretty wealthy people. If they paid something, wouldn't that make a lot more sense than just putting it all on the 1%, if you want to use that terminology? Because if you taxed all of the 1%ers, as you like to call them, 100% of all their earnings, it would still only make about a $30 billion.
Yeah, it doesn't fix the problem.
It doesn't fix the problem.
No.
There has to be fairness in taxation for all Americans.
So we hear that. I see Paul kind of shaking his head. Yes, we agree. And
one of the ways you get at that, I think, is you hit the reset button on the tax code. Go back to basics.
Sure.
Have a three-tiered progressive tax system. Have very limited deductions that make sense. Maybe the home mortgage deduction for your first home, but not your second home. Things of that nature, I think, we create, one, a sense of fairness, because there's a lot of people who don't think they really believe the fix is in. Mm-hmm. And that wealthy people control the political process because they pour a huge amount of money into these independent committees who go on the attack, really negative. Getting back to your initial question, Shelley, that creates that polarization. But they're the people that have the money, and they buy the lobbyists, and they control the political system. And a lot of people feel like they're left out. Now, if somebody, a political leader, came to them and said, "We're going to make this tax system fair, but you're going to have to pay a little bit too," they'd do it as long as they felt it was fair. And
you
I don't think
like
they
a Tea
feel
Party
fair.
Republican.
No,
Paul.
No. Look, the top 1% of this country owns 60% of the wealth of this country, and a lot of people don't think that's fair, and that's right.
Why?
If
they earned it.
Well, look, the concentration of wealth is not a healthy thing for our capitalist system, because as we denigrate the middle class and they get less and less wealth in their pocket, they can't buy the products that are being produced by the 1%.
Why is a fair question? And what I would respond to is that no rich person who has made a lot of money, and there may be some people in this room who fall into that category, did it on their own entirely. You do it within the context of an economy, within the context of a set of infrastructure resources that everybody contributes to. So yes, you should certainly have the ability to earn as much as you legally can and use your imagination and creativity as much as you can. The question then is, how much of what you have earned is based on your own, you know, your own talent and resource, and how much is really part of the surround?
Well, there definitely is a portion of that, Shelley, and I've heard you make that argument in the past. However, the government has totally regulated so many parts of the economic world. Perhaps this is something we can talk about when we come back from the news break. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look, the highest corporate tax rate in the entire world isn't in Sweden, isn't in Norway. It's in the United States
of America. Except nobody pays it.
I disagree with that. The real corporate tax rate.
Believe me, very low. They do pay it.
Yeah.
Not GE.
No, clearly. It's got to be fixed. Clearly, we have to lower that tax rate, and clearly, we have to make it so that you know what taxes to expect, how much you're going to pay, and that you don't have an army of people trying to get you out of that.
Yeah.
Those are important things, and I think that's an area of agreement. We have 1 minute to the news break, and actually, Rosemary's saying maybe 2 minutes. No. 30 seconds. Okay. We're going to thank Moe's Gallery because they're sponsoring this on Monday. We're going to attempt to find more areas of agreement and heated discussion as well. And I would just like to thank everybody for listening. And this is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. And we'll be back right after the news break.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The White House says the Obama administration will not negotiate with al-Qaeda, even though it is concerned about the safety and well-being of a 70-year-old American aid worker kidnapped in Pakistan 9 months ago. The five men accused of plotting to bomb a highway near Cleveland are going to stay in jail until their next court hearing. The five entered pleas of not guilty today. Opponents of Syrian President Bashar Assad are boycotting today's parliamentary elections. They say the balloting is aimed only at strengthening Assad's grip on power. On Wall Street, heading into the final half hour of today's trading, the Dow is down about 15 points at 13,023. The NASDAQ is up 6, the S&P 2 points higher. More details at srnnews.com.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron McIntosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves, Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
And we're back live in the studio. This is the Bill Buckmaster Show. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. Today's political debate continues in the second half hour with Paul Eckerstrom and Bruce Ash. And support for the Buckmaster Show comes in part from Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. And the political debate is always presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985, specializing in custom framing mirrors, art on your walls, picture framing and handling services, and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and moesgallery.com. Back with Bruce and Paul, and we've survived the break in the middle. We're still talking to each other, and hopefully you're enjoying our talking to you. What I'd like to talk about a little bit is the importance of education, both to the middle class and to our ability to maintain our competition and our economy at the kind of rate that it needs to continue. We've heard stories about 3 million jobs going unfilled in this country right now because we don't have a skilled workforce to take those jobs. Don't know whether that number is right or not, but it's the number you hear. And so let's start, first of all, with primary and secondary education and talk about public education. And can we get that back on track? I'm going to start with Paul this time.
You know, I will say education is the best dollar government spends because what's important about it is it is the great equalizer. It gives everybody an opportunity in our society. And my concern is with the shrinking amount of revenues by tax cut after tax cut, especially in this state, what you've seen is we don't spend near what we used to spend on education per child. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I don't think they're getting as good an education. And frankly, you can see it directly at the university level, where kids who are poor or lower middle class can't even afford to go to college unless they take huge amounts of loans out and are burdened the rest of their lives with that debt.
Okay, I'm going to stop you all for just 1 second. But what I want to do is see if we can get an agreement that, and this should be easy, that education both at the secondary level and at the post-secondary level is important to the continued prosperity of the country.
What's important is that we graduate more children from high school who actually have the ability to enter the workforce or go to JC or vocational or four-year college. And the fact of the matter is, and it's a disgrace here in the Tucson area, about 40% of all the children never graduate from high school. And those who do are sadly not prepared for entry into the workforce. Only 38.5% of those students entering Pima College have a sixth grade equivalent or higher education. And these are serious problems. And I submit that it's about time that we focus on reading, writing, arithmetic, history, civics, reasoning, develop people that have some sense of culture. And it's not just on the teachers, and it's not just on the administrators, and not just on the government. It's also on the parents who are to blame for some of the problems that we have today. We need to do a better job.
So I'm taking that number one as a yes. And then number two, what you're saying is we need to be doing a better job. I'm not going to get into a discussion of whether throwing money at it fixes the problem. You know, let's not go there because there's you know that could be the next.
But it's how you spend the money. I don't care how much. It's just as long as you spend it so that those things get accomplished. We need to graduate more people, and they need to be qualified to go into the workforce education.
Shelley, I don't disagree at all with Bruce on that. What I do disagree on is that we have been shrinking the amount of money going to our kids at schools. And it goes to your original premise. How come there's all this polarization? Well, what that means is if 47 or 40% of our kids don't have an opportunity to participate in our economy, they're going to be angry.
Yeah,
and it creates a polarizing dynamic in our society.
Right, and what I do hear, and it's very disturbing, and I'm not sure it's a right-wing thing or a left-wing thing, is what seems to be kind of a disparagement of education, a disparagement of higher education, of higher learning. The idea that, you know, you could do a 20-minute session and learn everything you need to know about a subject, that education is easy somehow, that we reward kids just for showing up. That strikes me as very troubling.
Well, we do reward kids for just showing up. Oftentimes, or too oftentimes, mm-hmm. and there's not as much critical focus on success and achievement as what there needs to be, and there has to be more parental involvement in school districts. Parents ought to be able to know how their schools are doing and have a free market choice to move their children to a school that's going to better fit their children's future, or to a charter school, and these are things that we must do on a wide scale basis all across.
So are parents the right people to make that judgment?
Who better? Would it be the government? I mean, it ought to be the parents.
I mean, when I went to school, I went to public schools in New York City. My parents couldn't make that judgment.
World today.
Well, that's very true. It is a very different world. The other thing that just to segue a little bit into higher education is when I was graduating from high school, I had a set of choices in New York that were virtually free. I could go to some very, very fine schools, colleges, and get engineering degrees, get law degree, get even a pre-med degree. And the per credit charge for a New York City resident at the New York City university system was zero.
Yeah. And Shelley, in this state—
As it is in most of Europe, by the way.
Well, I definitely want to be just like Europe, Shelley.
In this state,
we'll get to that.
College education is in our Constitution to be as free as possible. Mm-hmm. And I lived that. I was able to get an undergraduate degree and a law degree at less than $1,000 tuition and fees per year. And that was 1986 was my last year of law school. And now it's $26,000 a year to get a graduate degree like a law school, and it's $10,000 a year to get undergraduate. And you know, a kid on the South Side, that's like out of reach.
Yeah. How can we compete with a China or even a Germany who are educating their kids at postgraduate levels basically on the taxpayer's dime because they think it's good for their society and their economy, when we're burdening kids who getting out of school with, you know, very often six-figure debt burdens to complete an education?
Well, if college students today were getting the sort of education that would help them in a profession, in a field of endeavor that could help them get a job, whatever you had to pay would be well worth it. I, like Paul, had, you know, in the 1970s a relatively a good education at the University of Arizona. Mm-hmm. I would have paid a lot more for it if I had to at the time, and it served me well. you know, art history degrees
that most people don't have.
Art history degrees, like my wife had, meant that she had to go on to other, you know, graduate school level education to get other skills. You know, I'm not suggesting that kids today shouldn't study art history. There's a limited amount of auctioneers at Sotheby's who are going to be able to do something with an art history degree.
Well, I think ultimately what this really boils down to, though, is if we continue on the path we're going, and let's make no mistake about it, the cuts to our universities that have driven up tuition, the cuts to our K-12 that are dropping our performance level took place in this state over the last 20 years that have created lower and lower tax burdens for the wealthy in this state. And what ultimately happens is if you don't give everybody an opportunity through education and aren't willing to put the resources in to make it happen, what happens is you have a shrinking middle class and they can't buy products in the future to keep our economy strong. And they get there's lots of resentment, which creates the polarization that you were talking about.
So John, are we demonizing college degrees and just saying what we really need to do is be very specific in terms of focused careers? We're going to take a break. I'd like to just mention that the portion of the Buckmaster Show is made possible by the support of Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. Adobe House Antiques, located at the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell. Adobe House Antiques at 325-9439. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about education.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron Mackintosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Kolb Road extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already, two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan. Better water, pure and simple.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
And we're back live. This is the Bill Buckmaster Show. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill. We've got Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom with us, and we're continuing our discussion, trying to find areas of substantive agreement since we are coming at problems from very different perspectives. But are there areas where we can agree and move this country ahead, move the discussion ahead? We left off in the last segment talking a little bit about higher education, and Bruce was focusing on the importance of education being purposeful, being really, really aimed at giving a student the skills that he or she will need to make it in the real world, in this economy. Bruce, if higher education that met those criteria were free and paid for the way secondary education is paid for, would you agree to that?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
If free education, if public education didn't end at high school graduation.
Well, there's nothing free about public
education.
Well, of course
not.
We
it's
all paid
for by taxes. Well, that's, I think, what I said. If it were paid for the same way, if we could move back 40 or 50 years to a public college system that
but somebody
would be much
still has
more
to pay
affordable.
For it, Shelley.
Well, of course, it's got to be paid for by taxes.
So, again, I mean, I'm not sure what the scope of your question is. We're all paying for it. The simple answer is that there needs to be more focus on getting dollars that are in the classroom and not between the classroom and the federal government and the state government. Okay, there has to be more dollars that get spent in the classroom, more bang for the buck for children to get the education, less shackles on teachers and principals in order to educate our kids mm-hmm. more effectively, and continue the movement, what I call a free market education approach, to making sure that parents can help drive that agenda.
And I don't disagree with a lot of what Bruce says about this, but what I do think is we're not giving near the resources we once did to our public schools and to our public universities, so our tuitions are low enough so everybody has a chance. And the reason this is important is our original premise about the discord in this country. You know, there's a fundamental battle going on between what's the role of government and how big should it be and how small it should be. And what happens is, I think, very wealthy people get big tax breaks. And a lot of the resources from education are pulled out to put it there. That creates resentment. And so on the other hand, the people who are then have that money, they go back into the political system and basically, I think, create rhetoric that kind of divides the middle class, divides people against each other so that they can continue that process.
Right. But you're beating,
of concentration
up, on, you're beating up on this point. I don't necessarily
I know,
disagree with you. But the the question really in my mind is, you know, if you get more efficient with an education, if you become more focused with education, is there a way that we can make it more democratic in that more people have access to it? I guess that's the objective I'm trying to get to.
Everybody practically has access to education, secondary education, you know, in junior colleges as well as in four-year institutions, Shelley. Look,
I disagree with
Paul's premise regarding the amount of dollars spent on education, because the amount of money spent within the federal government has increased nearly threefold in less than 8 years. The quality of education has diminished because there's a lot of dollars that get spent before it ever gets into the classroom. We need more dollars spent in the classroom. That's I think
and
a
that
key
objection
answer to us.
And that objective we agree on.
We agree on.
I absolutely agree.
And so we're gonna leave education at that point of agreement. I'm reminded that the political face-off is always presented by Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing. It's family owned and run since 1985. And Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge at moesgallery.com. A really great place and a great place to get done what you need to have done in terms of art. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about foreign policy and international trade. Don't want to talk about wars and that kind of thing right now. But as you know, I'm a kind of financial guy, okay? And what has become very clear to me is that it is increasingly difficult in this country for us to compete against economies that are so focused in terms of what their natural advantages are and how they're moving their economies into, for instance, new industry, how they're moving their middle class, what they're doing with consumables, what they're doing with heavy manufactured goods, et cetera. Should our trade policy be driving our foreign policy, or should our foreign policy be more comprehensive than that?
You know what? I think I'm a self-interest type of guy when it comes to foreign policy. And I think we are not being well served right now with the way we are dealing with trade. And I'm not a protectionist. I believe in free trade. But I do believe that state-sponsored economies like China's, they do things to undercut our ability to compete by subsidizing certain industries, to knock us out of them totally, things that are unfair, basically unfair. So the concept of free and fair trade is what I would like to see our foreign policy driven by.
They're not going away, and they're not going to stop doing what they're doing.
Well, then we need to enforce some sort of trade policy on them. That, okay, if you're going to do that, then you can't sell your stuff to us. You know,
Paul. I rather Bruce. I'm sorry.
I would be a fair trader. Too oftentimes over the past number of decades, both Republicans as well as Democrats have wanted to be free traders. It's time for the United States to look out for number one. It's time for the United States to not cower, for example, as the diplomatic mission did last week in Beijing when this business came up with the dissident Cheng, because we were afraid of what sort of economic consequences might come from the Chinese government. It is in our best interest to promote liberty and freedom throughout the world. Liberty and freedom promote fair trade. And anything that has to do with fair trade, we're going to have an economic advantage for any place in the world. And that's what the United States needs to be doing more of, and I hope we will, in the upcoming 4 years after this next election.
And we need to do it before we lose that leverage of having the strongest economy in the world, I think.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what happened in Europe over the weekend. We have in France, a few weeks ago in Belgium, and certainly in Greece, we've got this movement to the left away from austerity as a way to kind of close the gap. We only have about 30 seconds. Quickly, Bruce, any thoughts on what's going on in Europe?
the combination of the French and Greek elections over the weekend should be something that all Americans ought to be very, very cognizant of. The move against austerity, the movement against paying off debt is going to be one that we will feel here in this country through the worldwide banking system.
And I would just say that we should keep an eye on that because we need to implement austerity in phases because we need to get out of this recession before we can really deal with tackle the deficit issue. And I think that Europe may have taken too strong a steps too early, and that's why you've seen the backlash.
Okay. Well, clearly there are very close similarities in these economies. And Bruce, I hear your concern, I think, by the way.
The success or failure of the EU, which is at stake right now, should be of consequence to all Americans and the entire world.
Well, the success of the EU, but also, of course, linked with it is the success of the Eurozone and how they manage those problems because –
you don't want to pay off debt, you're going to have big problems throughout the Eurozone.
Clearly. What I'd like to do is thank both my guests as we draw to a close. This hour just flew by. Rosemary is reminding me that I've still got more stuff to read from the perspective of our sponsors because radio doesn't happen without sponsors. Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger and Associates Certified Public Accountants located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Tomorrow, we're going to keep it local. Tomorrow, I'm going to be hosting again, and we're going to have the two new people who are appointed to help economic development in the city of Tucson. And both Maricela Solis is going to be here and Debbie Chandler, and we're going to have the full hour of discussion with them. Have a great day.
1030 KVOI Cortero Tucson and 930 KAPR Douglas, the voice. Good News Radio Network.